Welcome to Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee, a podcast brought to you by the Tennessee Initiative for Perinatal Quality Care. TIPQC exists to improve health outcomes for mothers and infants in Tennessee through our quality collaborative that will identify opportunities to optimize maternal and infant outcomes across our state and is funded under a grant contract with the state of Tennessee. The Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee podcast is designed for medical professionals and for patients and families across the state. We will focus on all aspects of the perinatal period with special attention to reducing our maternal mortality rate. This podcast is brought to you through a cooperative agreement with the Alliance for Innovation on Maternal Health.
Welcome to the Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee podcast brought to you by the Tennessee Initiative for Perinatal Quality Care. I am Danielle Wade, a maternal fetal medicine specialist and the maternal medical director of TIPQC. Today's discussion will focus on teen birth. Teen birth is a care process innovation designed to improve the safety, dignity, and equity of childbirth. We are grateful to have with us Dr. Amber Wyseth from Teen Birth. Dr. Wyseth is the director for the Delivery Decisions Initiative, or DDI, Ariadne Labs, where she oversees the design, measurement, and implementation of the Teen Birth Project. Dr. Wyseth has been an obstetric nurse for 18 years, specializing in quality improvement and project implementation. She is a research scientist at Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health in the Department of Health Policy and Management. Prior to joining Ariadne Labs, she served as Assistant Director for Maternal Infant Health Initiatives at the Washington State Hospital Association, where she led safety and quality work in the state's birthing hospitals. While there, she worked to decrease maternal morbidity and mortality in the state through implementation of a maternal early warning trigger system and qualitative blood loss measurement. We are so honored to have you here today with us, Dr. Wyseth. Welcome.
Great. Thank you, Danielle. I really appreciate the intro. And basically, the shortened version is I'm an OB nurse who's obsessed with quality improvement and data and improving care across the world.
Well, I will tell you, you definitely have a tribe in Tennessee. If you ever see board.
We love our Tennessee hospitals. They are so committed and so mission-driven that it's been wonderful to partner with them.
Absolutely. And we as the state love teen birth. So we are excited that you're here. And I'm excited just to have this conversation about teen birth. But let's start to talk a little bit more about yourself. I know you gave us the very quick version, but What brought you into this field? What's your history in QI and maternal health that connects today?
Yeah. Well, nursing, I honestly feel like I fell into. I didn't know that I didn't have a path set out to be a nurse, but as I was in college and taking courses, it came up as something to explore. And I actually became a nursing assistant first. And so I did that and was hired immediately into a labor and delivery unit and completely fell in love with that type of care. So I went to nursing school, finished that degree, and began working immediately in labor and delivery after graduation. And like many nurses or providers, pretty early into my time as a nurse, I had a sentinel event. And it was actually a patient that was having one of those kind of slow hemorrhages that creeps up on you. And at the time, I was in a hospital where we didn't have a blood bank. So I remember being at the bedside, watching the clock and watching her blood go from like dark red to a lighter shade of red to kind of pink, and calling and calling and calling, is the blood here yet? Is the blood here yet? And I remember like very vividly that experience, and I felt so powerless to do anything. And it wasn't because I didn't know what to do. It was really a system error. It was a system challenge because we didn't have the resources we needed and we didn't have it in place as quickly as we needed it. So soon after that, I kind of became activated by one of my leaders to participate and work around hemorrhage. So within my old hospital or within the state, I'm well known for being someone who really loves hemorrhages because I did kind of become obsessed. But it was obsession with the quality improvement practice, with being able to be a clinician and make systems changes within your hospital. So I did that. I ended up going back to school to learn more skills. And that's how I ended up I went and did my graduate degree and ended up being recruited out to come work at Ariadne Labs to lead this project Team Birth, which has felt like my baby at times. But I want to note that this Team Birth was actually started at Ariadne by Dr. Neil Shaw and a team there. And I got to join just in time to start the pilot trial.
What a great career path. Tell you, that is usually how we, it sometimes feels as if we fall into our passion, but I do believe that the steps have to go in a certain order so that they're meaningful. So we are so glad that you, your path has brought you to Team Birth. And I know we keep mentioning Team Birth, but do you mind just giving us the details about what exactly Team Birth is, what this great project is, and how it was developed and where we are today?
Yeah, happy to. I mean, the shortest version of what Team Birth is it's a teamwork and communication solution. And that solution is really aiming to make childbirth safer and more dignified. So meaning that the principles in it should make teams come together around patients to make better, safer decisions, but that by doing so, by elevating patients' lived experiences and their voice, that that's actually improving what we call like dignity or the experience of childbirth. So the two main kind of core requirements of Team Birth are team huddles, and there's kind of some topics to discuss. And also what's discussed in the huddle is written on a shared planning board, like a, think of it like a big dry erase board on the wall, so that all that information is both verbal and then visual. And this is so powerful. I know as a nurse, physician or a midwife might come in and talk to the patient about the plan of care, and then they leave the room. And I don't know, maybe 50% of the time, maybe more, the patient would turn to me and be like, okay, what did they just say? Or what are we going to do? What's the plan? And people have limited abilities to take in all that verbal information. So Team Birth provides it both verbally and written to really ensure everybody is on the same page. Now, you asked how it got started. So that's what I kind of alluded to, that Team Birth was started by Dr. Neil Shaw when he was the director of the program at Ariadne Labs. And at the time, Atul Gawande was the executive director of our organization. And the story that I've been told and heard is that we were really looking at the problem around C-section rates. Huge increase in those rates over the past, really, generation, and not a really clear explanation as to why. So Atul had given Dr. Shaw a piece of, basically a blank piece of paper and said, like, go figure it out. So the team at the time did a lot of research in what was causing this increased rates. They looked at health facility design. They looked at the flow of patients, what people put people more at risk for C-sections. And then they ended up basically going from that phase of discovery into a solution phase where they spent an entire year doing a design, a human-centered design around what are those best practices to bring teams together to make the right or the best decisions possible. There was lots of people involved across the country, whether it be patient advocates, clinicians, organizations, et cetera. And after that full year of design, Team Birth was born, and it pretty much is consistent to today as it was created back in 2017.
Wow, that's great. And you know, the things you're mentioning, of course, all of us feel like common sense. But yeah. I think the step that Team Birth is making is organizing the common sense, organizing the things that make sense. And communication is so key.
Yes. You know,
communication is so key. There are, I feel like we are really intelligent, great medical professionals doing the job, but sometimes the communication could be that one link. So I'm so glad that Team Birth's focus is on that. And then team, mm-hmm. It's in the name. And that's really important because it's not, no one's a silo in yeah. the work that we do. So that's really important. I know you guys are tried and true in this method, but can you speak a little bit more to that huddle experience? Traditionally, huddle has been seen as something of a punishment, something of a bad event or moment. But I love the thought of bringing huddle into just the ability to communicate and talk about outcomes regardless of what they are.
Yeah. Well, I'm really glad you brought up this notion that people are doing some of these things or a lot of these things most of the time. And that's exactly what Team Birth is attempting to augment, is that we want it to be done every time and with every patient. Well, there's a lot more knowledge growing around implicit bias and how it impacts clinicians' behaviors and managements of medical situations. We know that exists, and it's implicit because we can't tell that we're doing it, or we're not aware of doing it. So team birth creates a structure to help kind of fight those biases or your tendencies to maybe not give the same care to every person. So it really is standardizing these behaviors that should be happening every patient, every time. Now, with the component of the huddle, there are a lot of huddles in healthcare. That's actually something that we have come to find out as we've worked with a lot of hospitals. We were recently at a hospital where the word huddle was so overused that it was almost negatively triggering to those clinicians. So we ended up calling it a team meeting. But regardless, what the sort of the concept of the huddle is instead of having these siloed conversations where maybe the nurse and the patient are talking, and then in the hallway, the nurse and the physician are talking, or they're making decisions in the hallways, attempting to bring all of those pieces of information to the same place, which in healthcare is typically going to be at the bedside. And that conversation centers around the patient, that they have actually a speaking role in that conversation. And when we train hospitals, and especially for patients, like when they're being educated about the program, one of the first things that we want them to know is they're the center of the care team, and that they can call a huddle at any time throughout their stay. Which some hospitals do have, like a patient or family activated rapid response. So you could think of it like similarly, that a patient themselves or their family, anybody can call a huddle, which is basically like just bringing all the team together so that we can be on the same page.
Now, team birth, while sounds very amazing, and it is very amazing, I can see it being a shakeup of the culture that many may have in their work environment, on labor and delivery, postpartum, antepartum, wherever we have touch points with patients. Can you speak to how team birth addresses any maybe barriers from culture or the bringing in the support of the culture to help the project be successful?
Well, you're exactly right. It is a complex culture change. When we talk about team birth, we're really clear that it is an easy solution. When you look at it, it is easy. It is easy to learn how to do it. But if you actually are doing it right and everybody is doing it on your unit, it is going to shift power dynamics, and it's going to shift the culture fairly profoundly. And that requires work. It does. It requires commitment and work, leadership and buy-in, and all the things that are really necessary for any, you know, successful quality improvement initiative. But the main culture change it pushes for is who has the power and who has the voice. So in a lot of traditional historical medicine or in obstetric medicine, we have often sort of a top-down approach where a physician has the voice and the authority and is making decisions and may be really good at informed consent. But informed consent is different than shared decision-making. And that's sometimes a concept that's harder for providers to really, maybe conceptually they get it, but how do you actually practice that differently? And a lot of facilities, we find that nurses may not actually have voice in those decisions as well, or that their expertise is squelched, even though they're the ones that are really at the bedside a majority of the time patients are with us in the hospital. So the culture shift is, instead of the conversation sort of top down, we're attempting to elevate everybody's voice. And that means the physician too, but everybody has a voice to share their individual expertise, and acknowledging that each person's expertise is actually very different and very important for that decision to be made correctly.
Absolutely. I was just thinking that when you were saying the words, that's amazing to have that even playing field, right? Because everyone's perspective, that their expertise is so important. And there's been many times where I will come in the room and just hearing the perspective from a family member's experience or the nurse just completely changes the care plan in a way that's so much more helpful for the patient.
Yeah.
So I love that you're saying that even the playing field, because we do recognize that everyone's equally important on the team. We all have an important role to play in that, to look different for everyone, but we're all key in how we interact.
And I want to add in too around doulas, and I'm not as familiar with how active or what the doula presence is like in Tennessee. But a doula is really a key member of the healthcare team. And often when we're talking about doulas as a solution to improve the outcomes or experience in childbirth, that research is very, very clear. However, if you have a healthcare system that is set up structurally where people of lower power don't have a voice, or where doulas are maybe not truly viewed as experts, that doula is going to be coming into a broken system. They're not going to be able to fix a broken system, right? It's our job as the system to create a space that doulas really have a voice and role. And Team Birth aims to do that. Like, the doula does have a very visible and a speaking role as a part of those huddles. And we do provide additional education to doulas so that they come into the hospitals and they know, like, oh, this is a team birth huddle. This is my role in it. And here's my space for my expertise as well.
So true. It's I would say it's great that you mentioned that, because recently the state has shown support for that doula partnership and acknowledged the importance of the doula role on the team. So I am personally, and I know a lot of our listeners and those that do the work across the state, are excited to know that that has been put into place. So now we can build and cultivate that relationship with the doulas to be the extension that they can be, right? Because most times they are with the patient in the home and in between us doing visits or seeing in the hospital. And so I know more to come, and now having Team Birth to come in and show us how to use that in our hospital system is going to be even greater.
That's awesome. Perfect timing then.
Perfect timing. You mentioned earlier about implicit bias, and I just wanted to know if you could touch a little bit on how Team Birth approaches implicit bias in a very, I'm sure it's in a very thoughtful way, and build relationships, communication, help us personally as providers grow in the ways that will be most helpful for the patient.
Yeah, I think we do it in a variety of ways. In the setup and really education and training, we're pretty explicit around how bias exists in care, what the data says around it, and how by standardizing your approach and your communication techniques and skills with every patient ensures that you don't inadvertently create gaps for certain patients. So it's very explicitly a part of the sort of education and curriculum. But one of the things I think is actually maybe more powerful is the data we collect directly from patients. So as a part of, actually this started with our pilot trial, we needed to collect data from patients to know if it was making care better and how they felt about the program. So originally it was for the research. Well, as we have gone through working now with hundreds of different hospitals, we've come to understand that actually the data is part of the intervention, that it's actually a necessary part of that QI process for us to collect data directly and feed it back to the clinical teams and the implementation teams. And so I'll just give you a specific example. One of the questions we ask is around, did patients feel like that they were consented or that their permission was asked before exams and procedures? Now, when you ask providers, like, do you get consent before you do an exam on your patient? You're going to say, well, what would you say? You'd say what?
Yes, I do.
Yes, I do. Exactly. Okay. That's what most providers say. And in fact, in our data, when we looked at the data from this large sample across, I'll just speak to the Massachusetts hospitals. If you were non-Hispanic Black, only about 50% of those patients felt like they were consented. And this is without team birth. So this was just with standard care. And the non-Hispanic white population reported, I think it was around 74%. So almost three quarters were feeling consented. So when you show that to a health team, an implementation team, and you say, I know you don't think that you're giving biased consenting procedures, but your patients report you do. And that awareness and that sort of forced self-reflection, we see it behaviors change. Now, with that same, those same data points, once they implemented team birth, we saw all groups, all different race ethnicity groups reporting between about 85 to 90% being consented. So you saw it made a bigger difference or bigger improvement for non-Hispanic Black patients. And it also made a slight improvement for non-Hispanic white patients.
So interesting. You know, as you speak, it just makes me reflect on my personal, and I'm sure their listeners as well, just our personal practice and making sure, again, going back to that word communication, making sure what we set out to do is being received well and understood. Mm-hmm. Now, you may be aware, we're currently undergoing the project to promote vaginal delivery, i.e. lower our cesarean delivery rates. And that is an objective and goal across the nation with many hospitals. Teen Birth feels as if it can connect well in projects like that. But across the nation, how are many hospitals using Teen Birth to move forward in their care?
So there's a couple different ways that teams use it. I mean, everybody is using Teen Birth to improve the experience of care, the dignity of care, and really to address racial disparities in that experience. Because we do see in our data that Teen Birth makes the biggest difference, the biggest improvements for populations that have been historically marginalized. So especially non-Hispanic Black and our Alaska Native American Indian. So a lot of hospitals are truly motivated for that reason only. They feel like it's best for their patients. Interestingly enough, we have a group of hospitals that also want to implement Teen Birth really because of staff and unit culture relationships. You can imagine if you are bringing conversations to the bedside instead of on the phone or in hallways, like how are doctors, nurses, midwives all going to talk to each other differently in front of a patient? We're going to be held to be our best selves and be more accountable. And so Teen Birth, actually, we've done some research on this. It improved basically the relationships and the dynamics, the safety culture among staff. So that's motivating to a lot of hospitals. But when you're talking about C-section rates or other maybe clinical indications or concerns like hemorrhage or hypertension, often our teams view Teen Birth as the foundation and that all these other quality bundles or safety bundles kind of stack on top of it. So an example would be, you know, going back to all that hemorrhage work I was obsessed with, you know, we had a hemorrhage protocol and a hemorrhage cart and hemorrhage meds and QBL and all the things. But if the team never came together or the team never talked or we didn't actually listen to the patient, none of that rest of that bundle was activated. And so you could still end up with a pretty significant sentinel event. So we see teams really view Teen Birth as the structure to base all other quality improvement. We've had sites report to us, they see better timely treatment of hypertension. We've seen sites report they're decreasing their really massive hemorrhages. And then many sites have seen a decrease in their C-section rate, again, because you're making decisions transparent and involving the patient instead of just somebody in the hallway saying, let's take them back to the OR. And we do also have some decision-making guides that are really around the guidelines for C-section. So I didn't mention that earlier, but we do have some patient-facing shared decision-making tools around timing of admission and also around C-section decisions.
Well, I know that's not what Teen Birth originally set out to do, but what an amazing set of branches that have come from the roots of this project. Yes. And I'm sure that's all bundled into research and everything, but also just something, like you said, even motivating to bring into any community.
Yeah. Well, I do want to clarify that point because it was started back when Dr. Shaw was given that piece of paper, like, go fix the C-section problem. It was started all on the focus of C-section. But then once we started implementing it, we learned all of these other sort of components that we hadn't really considered. Like, oh, of course, doctors are going to be nicer to nurses in the middle of the night when they're in front of a patient or on a speakerphone. We didn't design for that, but that's what was sort of like additional positives that we learned later on.
That's great. Great. I know you spoke some to disparities and just by way of data. Is there anything else you can share with us as it relates to disparities and the differences that you saw with implementation of Teen Birth?
Yeah, I can definitely allude to some of the data we're collecting now. Like I said, we collected as a standard part of the work. And so we're now in about 15 different states and close to 150 hospitals. So quite a lot of data. I think right now we might have surpassed the 10,000 survey mark. We get a lot of patient data. And one thing we've seen, regardless of what state we collect the data, which hospital, we see this change in measures or experience measures based on Teen Birth implementation. So one that I have top of my head I can share with you is that we have been implementing Teen Birth across the state of Oklahoma. Now, this is work that is partnered with the Oklahoma Perinatal Equality Collaborative, and it was funded through the Oklahoma Department of Health through a HRSA grant. So there's 44 birthing hospitals, and we are now working with all 44 of them. We just had our fifth cohort sign up, which we're absolutely thrilled, including all of the tribal hospitals. And so of this group of 44, there's about 33 of them that are involved with IRB and research activities with us around patient surveying. And so in that group, we've got about 5,000 surveys, and we just did some preliminary kind of looking at the data. So it's not published yet, and it's not final. We're still collecting surveys through the end of the month. But what we saw is that we collected one survey measure using MADAM, which is Mother's Autonomy and Decision-Making, and one on TRUST, the Healthcare Relationship Trust Scale. Both of these, we see a statistically significant improvement across, in aggregate, across the board, with team birth implementation. And then when we break it down by race, ethnicity, for the MADAM score, we see the largest improvement being in that Native American population. And for the TRUST scale, it's kind of a three-way tie between Pacific Islander, non-Hispanic Black, and the Native American population, having the highest increase in those scores with implementation of the program. So we're going to learn more a little bit this month as we continue collecting the data, but we will look forward to getting those published hopefully later on this year.
That's such great work.
It's very exciting. I mean, it's a lot of work. I have an incredible team. I wish you could hear all their voices on the podcast because they are so passionate about the work. And it definitely takes a lot of people to do this kind of research and IRBs and data collection. And so they are truly incredible.
We are grateful for you and your team. Well, based on everything that you found through the Team Birth Project and the experiences that you've had firsthand and just hearing from the hospital systems that you worked with in the past, do you have any suggestions for providers, you know, anyone listening into the podcast that may feel the motivation to just change their everyday life?
Well, so if you're a provider and you are listening to this podcast, we probably would be great friends if we met in person, because I imagine if you're listening, you are a provider that's deeply committed to these issues and that you're probably a leader in your facility and a champion of quality improvement. So this advice, I'll give you a little bit of advice, but mostly the advice is probably for the rest of the group that's not listening, that's not engaged. I think everybody, no matter how many years you've been provider, nurse, midwife, physician, anything, having a continual growth mindset and humility to keep learning is probably the most important thing. When we start working with facilities, pretty unanimously, there will be providers who say, I already do this. This will be easy. I already do this anyway. But, you know, maybe it could be helpful for my partner so-and-so. So there's usually support, but also just like, I already do this. And also with all these same sites, after a few months of providers really doing team birth and actually when the initiative gets launched, they come back to us and say, okay, I thought I was doing it, but I really wasn't doing it. And so I think being able to approach this idea of shared decision-making and really listening to patients and really elevating their expertise and preferences, it takes humility to do that. And if you are leading these kind of quality improvement initiatives at your facility and you have some resistors, I say my best advice is just don't focus on them too much. They will come around eventually, and it can be really discouraging, and it takes up a lot of our emotional energy if we focus on those resistors. But instead, focus on all the potential champions and all the other people who really are interested and willing to learn, and let that kind of build up steam, and eventually these folks will come along.
That's great advice. For any pregnant persons listening, family members of a pregnant person, people planning pregnancy soon, any advice to them in this space?
Yeah, I always feel mixed about this question because I want to say, like, speak up and make sure your voice is heard. And if you're uncomfortable or you don't feel safe, like, keep speaking up, keep asking for help. But the responsibility isn't on patients. It's not on patients to fix the healthcare system. It's not on them to be able to prevent bias that may be occurring at them. So it really is the responsibility of the healthcare system. So if you're a patient and you want to see these changes, well, yes, speak up. That's great. But also consider getting involved, putting pressure on your hospital to make changes, be involved in a patient advisory committee, really try to use encouragement and some healthy pressure to get hospitals to consider taking up an initiative like Team Birth that's really aiming to focus and center the care around you as a patient.
Absolutely. And finally, Tennessee is a state that we couldn't get our work done without the help of great community partners, support systems in the community, community leaders. And I know that's across the nation that support is present. If they're listening today, what should they know? What type of maneuvers can they make, advice that they can take back to their organizations to continue to support or just improve the support that they're giving to our pregnant persons?
Yeah. Well, in certain regions of the country, we've had an incredible privilege to be really knit in well with the health systems and also the community. And I want to give an example for it because I think it's a best practice and I would love to see this kind of grow. So in the Tulsa area, we had one of our pilot hospitals there for the pilot trial was in Tulsa, St. Francis. And then we had the opportunity through the George Kaiser Family Foundation to spread to two more Tulsa area hospitals. And then now, like as I already told you, we're statewide. But so we've had a long-standing history in the Tulsa area and had very specific engagement with community groups, especially the Tulsa Birth Equity Initiative. Now, they have doulas that they train that are on staff. They also have a hospital quality officer. So what this partnership, sort of this like community health system partnership has created is so much more transparency around what is actually happening within care and what are the problems and what are potential solutions. And just a few months ago, our team was working with one of the medical schools, OSU, and their residency program, integrating Team Birth into the residency simulations. So we were doing shoulder dystocia. And a part of this learning experience, we had nurses from the hospital come as well as doulas from the community come. And we all did the simulation together. And then afterwards, the doulas coached and gave feedback to the residents about the care and their, especially their communication. And it was so powerful to watch because not only did the doulas give great feedback, even better than I, because I missed a few things as being a nurse, things that might be more normal to me. They gave great feedback. And then the comments back and forth to each other was like, wow, I actually trust you more now. When I come to the hospital, like I'm going to feel more comfortable working together. So I know that's an anecdotal example, but I think if you're in a community-based organization and you have deep roots and trust with your community, be thinking about what are the ways that we can actually connect to our health systems, connect to those that are educating our next generation of physicians and midwives and nurses, and build those transparent communication and work pathways back and forth, because it creates so much more strength and so much more power to make change.
Well, thank you for that tweetable moment.
Yes, I really have some great pictures. I wish people could see them, but it was really inspiring. And I look forward to continuing that work and hopefully sharing it in other places like Tennessee.
Absolutely. It sure is inspiring. Well, you've shared so much great information with us today. If a team, a hospital team, a community team, anyone's interested in connecting into Team Birth, how do they go about getting into the project?
Yeah, a couple different ways. They could always contact you all as the State Perinatal Quality Collaborative, and you could connect your teams to us. That's one way. Another way is through our website, which is Ariadne Labs. We also have an email, so deliverydecisions@ariadnelabs.org. And then just to note, if you do go to the website, we do have all of our tools available on the website for free. So you can take those tools and you can choose to implement them. Most hospitals do want additional support because like we talked about before, it's the change management. It's the culture change that's the really hard part. So that's really for those that are interested in our team supporting, we could talk through what are the different options and they could reach out, like I said, through you guys or directly to us.
Dr. Wiseth, I really appreciate you joining us today and sharing your expertise. We appreciate Team Birth, your team, especially for the work that you're doing and the efforts that you're putting towards moving the needle towards safer, equitable care for all of the citizens of this country and beyond. I appreciate you joining us. Any final words of wisdom or thoughts as we close today?
Thank you for this opportunity. I love Team Birth. I believe it should be the standard of care for all people giving birth in the US and beyond. And so I thank you just for the opportunity to share a little bit about it. And I look forward to being able to work with more of the hospitals in Tennessee in the future.
Absolutely. And we do the same. Thank you again. And thank you everyone for joining us today. Please see the show notes for information about Team Birth as well as other resources. Stay tuned. We'll be providing more information and podcasts on great resources for the state of Tennessee. Join us next time.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee, presented by TIPQC. TIPQC is funded under a grant contract with the state of Tennessee. Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee is brought to you through a cooperative agreement with the Alliance for Innovation on Maternal Health. Do you have ideas for a future guest or topic, or even have a question you would like answered on upcoming episodes? Visit www.tipqc.org, that's TIPQC.org, and click on podcast to submit suggestions and questions to our podcast team. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast to be the first to know when new episodes are available, and find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube to stay in the loop with our active projects and other relevant news relating to perinatal health in Tennessee.